Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
You already know that Invisible Fence Brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Relax the back. Solutions for back pain. Feel better. Work better. Live better. Don't let back pain keep you from the golf course. Let our specially trained associates guide you to the perfect solution for your discomfort. Relax the back, now selling the mattresses of the future. The most comfortable bed you will ever sleep on. State-of-the-art mattresses and pillows for better sleep and a healthy lifestyle. We offer a complete line of comfort solution products that will improve posture, circulation, and overall health, including a wide array of ergonomic office solutions, back support, height-adjustable desks, fitness and therapy products, and the best selections of zero-gravity recliners available anywhere. Relax the Back Solutions for back pain, the country's leading specialty retailer of neck and back pain relief and back comfort products, as well as world-class massage chairs, located at 6343 Penn Avenue. Call 412-362-2225. That's 412-362-2225. Online at relaxtheback.com.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next.
It is the Morning Sports Report on Trib Live Radio, brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand, creating happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com. That's InvisibleFence.com, as you can see on our video, or if you can listen at home and tell that, yeah, it's me, Tim, speaking first. That means Ken is out because he is busy cooking up every possible reference that he can make over the next 3 days to the curse of the Billy Goat to tell you that's why the Pirates are going to win and beat Jake Arrieta in the wild card game. Now that's official.
Will there be meaningful baseball in October now? It looks like there will be. And third year in a row at PNC Park, Tim, and at least they managed to nail that down. I have mixed feelings about that because the Cubs have the best road record in baseball, and Arrieta only lost once on the road all year. I think they're more vulnerable at home for psychological and physical reasons. But, you know, you still want the home game. I mean, the atmosphere is going to be – you want the home game for the fans here. I mean, you know, they're going to be excited, and another blackout. It looks like the weather's supposed to be 63 degrees at first pitch, so I'm excited about it.
This struck me as I was getting ready to come in today. It feels like the build-up to that week of the Super Bowl when the Steelers lost to the Packers, insofar as you know what the storyline is going in. It's so clear, it's so cut and dry, just like it was for Pittsburgh. Can your secondary contain Aaron Rodgers? The secondary one was, can your offensive line hold up for Roethlisberger? That was basically it, and there are two storylines for the Pirates as well in this game against the Cubs. It's, can you get to Jake Arrieta, yes or no, and will you put together a lineup that features a little bit more hitting as opposed to a little bit more defense?
You know, Tim, I think the thing that people are, nationally and even locally, everything is focused on Arrieta, 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 and it should be. He's had an historic second half, phenomenal numbers, no matter how you break them down, home, road, PNC Park, you know. But I think lost in the shuffle here a little bit is what Gerrit Cole has done and Gerrit Cole's mentality. He, of all the Pirate, right now, I think Jay Happ is the best Pirate pitcher. At this moment in time, I think I would rather have him start if he could do it. But in terms of mentality, having been there and done that before, a guy who really never flinches, I think he's being undersold a little bit at the moment. The average start for the year for Arrieta was 7 innings and 1.6 runs allowed. The average start for the year for Cole was 6.5 innings. I know there's no half inning, but that's the way the math works out. And 2 runs allowed. That's pretty close. I mean, I'll put all the pressure on him. I think this is gonna, you know, it's obviously going to be a low scoring. He has to go out there and throw up zeros. He can't give up 2 or 3 runs in the third inning or the second inning or get chipped away. He's got to go 0 for 0 and hope that you're close when you can get Arrieta out of the game.
It can't be anything greater than 2-2 going into the eighth when they turn it over to the bullpen. Maybe even 1-1 going into the eighth, turning it over to the bullpen.
But I don't have the I think the Pirates are the underdog just because of what Arrieta has done. But you also look at the math. You know, you think of Bob Prince's hidden vigor. They won 8 games in a row going into the postseason. You know, the last time they lost, the Pirates beat them twice in a row last weekend. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. They are behind the eight ball facing a guy with historic numbers. But, I, as I said, I think Cole's being undersold a little bit.
It is the Morning Sports Report with Tim Benz and Guy Junker. Wild card coming up at Wednesday night at PNC Park. And you mentioned Hap. You brought this up before, Guy, and it's entirely possible that he is their best starting pitcher at this moment. Since they acquired him, 7-2 with a 1.85 ERA that continued yesterday. Again, he was phenomenal. I don't know how much of the game you saw yesterday.
But yeah, most of it.
That little rotation that Ray Searidge made, or the adjustment in his rotation of his hips, appears to be a cure-all. And every other pitching coach this guy must have had along the way is probably kicking themselves saying, huh, if I had seen that, I could have been the pitching coach that fixed J-Hap.
Well, if ifs and nuts, you know. I mean, he's done this with more than – if he'd just done this with one – the hardest thing to me, I think, and even talking to coaches over the years, is getting guys to listen to you. I mean, the guys that have made it to the major leagues don't just take advice from any Tom, Dick, or Harry that spits it out there because he's wearing a major league uniform. So, and we've had him on. You know what kind of personality he has. He's almost like a Santa Claus kind of guy. I think a big part of coaching at that level is getting your message. We've gone through this in hockey. I always thought Kevin Constantine was one of the brightest minds ever to stand behind the Penguin bench. But, you know, his use of video and everything was so advanced at the time. Yager didn't want to watch it. Those guys just wanted to play. If no matter how smart you are, if people don't listen to you, it isn't worth anything. And I think part of Searidge's magic is he gets guys to listen to him, even a guy like him who came in here and doesn't really know him. And you spend spring training with a guy, maybe you watch him for a month or so, and you think, hey, he knows what he's doing. I should listen to him. Or maybe Hap had just become so frustrated at where he was and the struggles that he had that he was willing to try anything. But as I said, it's not just him. And whether it was Volquez, whether even you can even say Burnett, you know, this is the best ERA Burnett's ever had this year. His last year, it's his best earned run average. So the guy works some magic, and I think personality has as much to do with it as his baseball knowledge.
Did the Pirates make a mistake by not setting up their rotation so they have pitched in the wild card game and get Cole for game one?
No, I think especially mentality. But Cole's just such a – he's such a cool customer, and he's such a competitor, and I think he's the right guy for the job. I would have liked to have seen Hap go in the second game. The first game against St. Louis. And I think it'd be much easier to analyze Tim if it was a series. I mean, if you can look at rosters, and I think one game is just such a crapshoot. I mean, Babe Ruth could play and strike out 5 times. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know what to think. I mean, I think there's a less than 50-50 chance that they win just because Arrieta's been so good. But, you know, I don't know the analyze one game the way you would if they were playing a best out of 5. But I think certainly I would pitch Hap ahead of Liriano. In fact, I worked up some numbers here on, you know, everybody's been, you know, complaining about Locke and Morton and everything. The Pirates, when Morton started this year, were 14-9, and he was .500. A.J. Burnett, they've lost 6 of the last 7 times he started. Not his record. The team has lost 6 of the last 7 times Burnett has started. They were only .500 when he started for the season. You know, I mean, he went out in a pretty good blaze of glory and even was much better when he came back after the arm problems than I thought he was going to be. But if they advance to the Cardinals, I'd go Hap, Liriano 1-2.
So you start J-Hap in game 1? And then have Liriano in game 2.
Then I go Cole in the first home game, and then I'd probably come back with Burnett in the 4 if there's a game 4, because it would be at PNC Park. I'm not pitching Burnett at Busch Stadium. So then I'm getting way ahead of myself. But
that would have Hap on, what, 3 days rest then?
No, because game
Monday,
2.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You said Hap, Liriano.
Yeah, so Hap would be Friday night. That would be.
Oh, because it's another day off, right? Another day off. That's right. Okay. So, yeah, that would be full rest then for him.
And the perfect.
Right.
Some guys get that extra day and they don't feel as right. That would keep him right in his groove.
The argument that would be used against that then is you want to go lefty, righty, lefty.
Yeah.
Turn the order around from night to night. You don't want guys.
That would have to put Burnett in St. Louis, though.
Right, and he is a disaster every time in St. Louis. Yeah. I don't buy into that as much as other people do with the whole lefty-righty turn the lineup thing around. I don't know, when I say other people, it's other baseball people. Unless the pitchers are exactly the same, very similar guys, I don't think it matters all that much.
Well, I mean, do you think
Liriano and Happ are too similar that you wouldn't get a different feel, a different look?
No, I think they're different, and I also think that it's different in a long season than it is in a short series. You got to go with your best guys. I don't care if they throw with their toes. Hurdle brought that. I never thought about it quite that much. I always thought, you know, if you've got a junk ball pitcher and you've got a guy that throws hard, it's nice to alternate that kind of look, regardless if they're righty or lefty. But Hurdle brought that up after the All-Star break when he was setting things up. And at one point, Locke and Liriano were back-to-back in the rotations. He doesn't like to do that because you face a team and you got platoon guys playing. You don't like to get in that second night of looks. It's nice to have a guy come off cold. So it makes a little bit of sense. But I think when you get down to the playoffs, some of that stuff is different than it is for a three-game series in San Diego in July.
SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. That's how you get a hold of us. Send us your thoughts on the Pirates going into this wild card game against Jake Arrieta. I'll answer my own question. It crossed my mind yesterday when I saw Happ pitching well again. Should they have just gone with Happ in the wild card, then have Gerrit Cole lined up for game one of a playoff series? But if he's your number one overall draft choice, if he is your alleged ace of the staff, you've got to do it the way they ended up doing it. Just the way that you, and maybe that's not a smart way to go about it. Maybe that's not a smart way to think about it, because you should just give yourself the best chance to win that wild card game. But the argument can be made, and I think it was yesterday, that you feel like you've got a better chance to win the wild card if you're at home. And Happ securing that yesterday was reason enough to pitch him on his regular rotation, and then you go with the guy that you're building your rotation around for the wild card game itself.
Yeah, I don't question it at all. I mean, there's been chunks of September where I'm like, boy, if that game was today, I think I'd start Happ. He seems unhittable, but that was a pretty lame Reds lineup, but actually it wasn't. They had some guys. The one thing the Reds did do, I don't know if you know this, their last 64 games, they started a rookie pitcher.
I did hear that. Wainer was talking about that in the broadcast and just baffled. That's a record, right? Isn't that a record?
I don't know. I read it. I didn't hear Wainer talking about it, but
I thought maybe
I mean, they won one of their last 15 games, and it had to be against you, and it almost could have cost you, a home field advantage.
Yeah,
I was at a high school game Friday night, and when they announced the score of the PA 4-0 Cincinnati, I was ready to go over and kick the Gatorade. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Marte deserves a lot of credit for how he almost single-handedly won that game from that point going on. Made a nice catch, had a double, and then hit the home run in the 12th. But that game was frustrating to watch, too. And that was another thing, like, you know, I talked about on the Friday or Thursday how their season was encapsulated by that last afternoon game. You saw everything about this Pirates team that you liked and everything that you hated within the first four innings of that game. And it was kind of similar in the Reds game, except you just saw the bad stuff early, then the good stuff late, as opposed to at the same time. You saw throwing errors. You saw base running mistakes. You saw less than disciplined hitting at home plate. You could have second guess the lineup, whatever, and they ended up coming back late and winning the game in extra innings because of Marte's great performance. Polanco also threw out the pitcher at first base. That was kind of the play that turned it around, I thought. That's what got the momentum going back in their direction, was for the second time, Polanco going 9-3 on a hit by the pitcher.
Well, if there's ever a game where you can't afford the gaffes that they've pulled off regularly, I mean, they've played some clean games this year, lots of them. They have to do that. What you can't in a one-or-done game have a key base running error against a pitcher. If you get a guy on, you better be awfully smart against Arrieta. And you can't, you know, make a fielding error that leads to an unearned run in a game that the final's probably going to be 2-1. In a long series, you can't ignore what they've done historically, Tim. Two teams in their history won more games than this team. And both of them had Hannes Wagner playing for them over 100 years ago. So they've overcome a lot of their warts, which shows you how much talent they have. But on any given night, You can either get a clean game or you can get something that's very ugly. And they better win or lose Wednesday. They need to play clean. They got to play good fundamental baseball for 3 hours.
One thing that made me feel really good about the prospects of the Pirates against Jake Arrieta is that if that game does go extra innings, if it is 1-1 or 2-2 late, and they've got to lift Gerrit Cole for a pinch hitter, and it stays tied for a while, again, you saw how durable and reliant the bullpen can be in a game of that nature, which goes extra innings, which you got to take the pitcher out early for injury. You're going to take him out because of ineffectiveness. The bullpen can keep you in it as you come back. You know, you saw that basic strategy of the Pirates coalesce in that game because it was 7 innings pitched of shutout baseball from the bullpen. I think it was 5 different relievers or something, but they all did their job. And if it is a close game going late, going into extras against Arrieta, that's part of the reason why you can still have optimism.
And all will be available. They'll all be rested. You know, Bastardo went 2, didn't he? He went 2 innings in that game. I mean, that's been one of their strengths all year. And I thought it was the one weakness of the Cubs earlier on. They're not the same bullpen as they were in April. They're a little better there. But, I mean, it's a shame, no matter what, that a six-month season is decided by 9 innings, but that's the way it is. And it's the third straight year that even if there wasn't a second wild card, that they would have been in. I don't think they have to feel like they've cheapened their way in, certainly by winning 98 games.
Travis Shawchuk today in the Pittsburgh Tribune Review wrote another story about whether the wild card round should be expanded. And I think you and I are in agreement. It would be nice, and it makes sense, just trim the regular season a little bit.
Yeah, there has to be another change somewhere else if they're going to do that. You can't. You're already into November if you go 7 games.
You're going to have to pick between watching football and Thanksgiving and the World Series at this point if they keep pushing it back. I understand the complaints about it, but then I understand the economics of it might not lend itself to a possibility of having a 2 out of 3 for the wild card. Unless you do something with the regular season. I'm completely wrapping my arms around the notion of shortening the regular season a little. I don't care about the statistics. The statistics are out the window anyway.
Yeah.
You know, baseball number lines between the various levels of expansion, the difference in the ball, the difference in the fences, the difference in the equipment, the bats, the difference in pitching rotations, and, of course, steroids for 20, 30 years as well. All the numbers are out the window anyway. So you adjust the schedule back a week. I don't have a problem with this whatsoever.
You know, I was thinking about innings pitched, pitch counts, you know, guys that pitched in the 40s and 50s, and they complain about guys being coddled today. I wonder the difference, Tim, in you figure the World Series was already underway if this is 1956.
Right.
I mean, it's starting now. Guys then would, you know, guys would pitch 9, 10 innings, a 13-inning game, and the starter's still in the 13th inning. But the season is also over for most teams at the end of September. Is it more the wear and tear of pitching starting in mid-February all the way through, if you're a playoff team, the end of October, is that more wear and tear on your arm than a guy who crammed in more innings in a 5.5-month span? You know, is that part of the reason why guys then could throw? Just thinking about it from a physical
So we're saying, like, all this talk about how you got to pitch yourself into shape and, you know, working your way up and so forth.
Yeah, the old-time guys say that you build up arm strength by throwing more. Is it different if you only do it for 5, 5.5 months than even if you have less innings but you're throwing every 5 days for 6.5 months? Is that, you know, another month and a half onto your – I don't know what time they went to spring training back in the – you know, in the middle part of the 20th century, were they going in mid-February? I'm guessing it was probably a little later than that. So, you know, a team that makes the postseason a starter may actually throw less innings than Vernon Law did, but, you know, he's pitching over a seven-month period. Is that worse for your arm?
Don't you think it's also got a lot to do with the fact that they're throwing more sliders, they're throwing more pitches that put increased torque and wear and tear on your arm? I mean, back then, you know, there weren't a lot of sliders being thrown. There weren't a lot of variations on the fastball. Not as much torque on your elbow as you're getting these days.
No, they go wore out with double pump windups.
That's right.
By the time they threw their third pitch, they were wiped out.
They're exhausted. Right? They needed Gatorade in between every pitch. But as far as the wear and tear on the pitchers, that's even less of a concern to me than just how late in the season that we're going, late in the calendar.
I mean, every season. Once the Penguins are out, I end up watching less and less of the Stanley Cup playoffs as the weather gets warmer. I'm just getting ready to,
ready for baseball.
Yeah, and if it's 75 degrees outside and it's late May and the Penguins are out of it and there's games on TV that a month earlier I might have been sitting there on a night off watching all of it, I'm going to be outside. I might be at my, and I feel the same way about everything else. I mean, football's the one I think about that at the high school games. We're out there on a Friday night in late August sweating our butts off covering a high school football game. By the time the championships come around, you could have 6 inches of snow. And I mean, it really, and that's a high school season. These kids that go to the state championships are playing almost at Christmas time in early December now.
I'll say this about the whining about the Pirates having this bad luck that they're in the division that they're in, and that's all it is. It's bad luck. It's unfortunate. I'm all on board with changing the format and instituting a best of three for the wild card. Just you got to make some sacrifices and give up some assured money at the gates. You know, basically it's one road series, one home series that you would be sacrificing. If the owners are all right with that, great. I just don't know how many owners are going to be all right with that, particularly those that don't feel like they're going to be in the playoff mix. And those are owners that probably need three more gates anyway because they're frequently not selling out their building.
Well, I can remember during the 20-year losing streak when shortening the season came up, and a team like the Pirates at that time would not have been for that. You know, that's let's say you go back to 154. That's eight less games on Root Sports. I don't know what they make per game, but that would cut into their home gate. Even though, what do you get in your last four home games in September in a losing season? Not much. The thing about it is, I think if you in terms of shortening the season or having the like a three game or a five game playoff, I think that. I like your idea. I think it was your idea. We discussed it at least. The reseeding after one round. If you win the wild card game, then if a team in your division beat you out, you got to play the wild card game. That's the way it should be. You didn't win your division. But if you win that wild card game, then you shouldn't have to play St. Louis in the second round.
Yeah, that is.
Then reseed. Let them play the Mets.
Yeah, I'm on board with that as well. That's also something that I thought needed to be done one way or even if you do expand this wild card round into a best two out of three, I'd still do that.
Yeah.
I'd still make it so that if you're the top team in either the American League or the National League, you get the lowest survivor, the lowest division winner or wild card winner.
That way St. Louis is rewarded for a great year, and the two of you, the way it is now, I mean, the three best teams in baseball, and they're going to knock each other off. Only one's going to survive to get to the NLCS.
SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. You can send emails to Guy and me directly there, or you can tweet us at Ben's TribLive970, at Guy Junker, WTAE. You can find us on Twitter there, and we'll get to your tweets, too. We also need to talk about the lineup and what that's going to be for the wild card game. I think it's pretty simple at this point. I think you go Polanco, Harrison, McCutchen, 1-2-3, Marte, Walker, Alvarez, 5-6, and then Cervelli, Mercer, Cole. I don't want to see Alvarez in that seventh hole because I don't want to see him intentionally pitched around by, not that Arrieta would, he would probably just go after anybody anyway, but move him up so you at least have Cervelli behind him.
And he's hit a home run off Arrieta this year. I believe he's the only guy in that lineup that has, right?
That might be the case,
I think he's the only one. McCutchen's, you know, in 380. McCutchen and Marte are the two guys that have handled him okay, that haven't been just completely handcuffed by him. So those are the nine position players I had. If you want to argue about where they bat a little bit, I could live with that. But that's the guys that I would start.
So you bring Aram off the bench then too?
Yes.
Especially since Harrison's been playing pretty well lately.
He looks like he got his groove back. I mean, he was on base. He had a triple and a double in the last two games in key spots too. Was on base three times Saturday night. They have two or three hits again yesterday. It looks like you got a swing back.
Here's the other thing that comes into play if you're making the decision between Aramis Ramirez and Harrison at third base. If we are in agreement that that's the one question mark, you don't think they'll put Pedro on the bench, especially after yesterday,
I
right?
do not, no.
I mean, if there's any doubt, that ball that is still traveling over the river right now as we speak was probably...
Took out the sign at the Renaissance.
I thought that we'd see lots of home, not lots, but more home runs maybe than what we have at PNC Park with direct homers over the Clemente wall. But
into the river.
That one was going in the river to right center.
Yeah.
That was a moonshot yesterday.
Well, when he hit it, as soon as he hit it, you know, his reaction, you knew it was gone. But when the camera first backed off and they showed that wide shot of the park, all the people in the stands turned their backs. You could see everybody's back. I'm like, holy. And then all of a sudden you just saw the little white blob disappear.
No, I saw the same thing you did. The outfielder turned his back, and then immediately all the people in the stands turned their back and said, oh, my God, how far is this one going? But, yeah, it was 479, I think, is what they measured it at. And what was Sosa's? What was Sammy Sosa's?
at PNC Park?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Well, Kip Wells for a long time had one of the long. I think Sosa's was under 500, though, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
I would have said 480 if you had just asked me off the top of my head, but I don't remember.
So at any rate, he hits that, and I think that was the nail in the coffin if you were trying to get him out of the lineup. That's just not going to happen after you see something like that. That was the deal breaker. I think he was in before that anyway for the reasons we've pointed out. So now it comes down to third base, and it's just Aram or Harrison you're talking about, unless you wanted to put Harrison at second and put Aramis Ramirez at third and then have Neil Walker as a switch hitter coming off the bench. That would be a PR nightmare if it went bad, though, in Walker's potential last game as a Pirate. That's like I talked about before with Hap. Maybe you shouldn't look at it that way. Maybe that shouldn't matter. I still think having Walker in that lineup is beneficial to them, though.
I don't think it should matter. I think Walker's a better second baseman than Harrison is. So I don't want to see Harrison and Alvarez on the right side of my infield. I think that's given up too much. And I'm not saying Harrison's a bad second baseman, but he's a utility guy, moves around. He'll make great plays at a lot of different positions, but just on a, you know, and I've heard forever Neil Walker doesn't have a lot of range. Once again, yesterday, he comes up in the first inning after McCutchen failed to get a guy in from second with less than two outs. He comes up with two outs. I just think the guy is a clutch player that comes through when you absolutely need him the most. I want him in there. It has nothing to do. It could be from Pine Richland or, you know, Pine Bluff, Arkansas. I don't care.
Ramirez coming off the bench to me is also, I think, a good spot to have, because if you do get the scenario that we've brought up before where it's 1-1 in the eighth or it's scoreless in the seventh or something like that, and you've somehow gotten Cervelli or Mercer on and you're coming up with Cole's spot in the lineup, you're ready to turn it over your bullpen, he's giving you a solid start. Who do you want coming off the bench to give you a more professional at-bat with the potential for some pop or to hit one into the alley off of Arrieta? Is it Josh Harrison or is it Ramirez? I mean, I think Ramirez serves the purpose of coming off the bench better than Harrison does at this stage. Would you agree with that?
I definitely agree with that, yeah. And he really had a nice run against the Brewers. The Cubs are the team he spent most of his major league career with. I mean, it just seems like a nice scenario going out against the team that you played with. And I agree with that. I think he would be a little – I don't think Josh Harrison's a guy that would crack under pressure at all. I just think he's a veteran going out. And he's got nothing left to lose. I just think he would be a calm guy in that situation.
I think you limit what you net from Harrison if you bring him off the bench, because if you put him into the lineup early and you give him three chances, you're giving him three chances to get a hit, you're giving him three chances to get a walk, you're giving him three chances to get on base and use his legs, which helps you. And you're also then, by that thought, having him in front of McCutchen and Marte, your two guys that can potentially drive in runs in the 3-4 spots, I think that's where you get the most out of Harrison as opposed to bringing him off the bench late. Ramirez is just as likely with one swing of the bat in the seventh as it is in the second to hit a home run or knock one into the gap with, at that point, you would hope, somebody on base like Cervelli or Mercer, who's been hot lately.
Well, I think it's more important than ever that, you know, when you face ace pitchers, when you face Hall of Fame-type pitchers, Cy Young-type pitchers, you got to get to them early. That's been a baseball adage for a long time. And I don't think Arrieta's going to crush under pressure or be nervous. And I still think Cueto's physical issues 2 years ago had more to do with his performance than the crowd chanting his name. It might have been a combination of both. But I think if he is going to have any issues, feel the pressure. It's if you get to him a little bit early. You know, you get a pitcher that's in a game 6 innings and he's mowing people down. Well, the six may be long. Let's say a guy goes through 4 innings and you don't have a base runner yet. All of a sudden, he walks a guy and goes out of the stretch for the first time in hours. To me, Arrieta's never pitched in a postseason game. He's cruised along here. He's got one loss in his last 17 games, and the Cubs were no hit in that game. That's the only way that he's been beaten, you know, in months is when a guy threw a no-hitter at the Cubs. If you get a run or two off him early, that, I think, then – I don't think the pressure is going to bother him from the beginning, but if you score off him early, it's been a long time since he's had a pitch, you know, losing, certainly a game of that magnitude he has never been in before. That's where I think then maybe you can get him doing things that he doesn't want to do.
Anything you want to bring up about the Pirates, the looming wild card game, Arrieta, the matchups, the lineup, what you would do, where you would put your third baseman, is it in, where in the lineup, and who specifically should it be? Any thought about putting Neil Walker on the bench, Josh Harrison at second, Aramis Ramirez at third. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com, and I see some emails coming in already, and we'll get to those as this hour moves along. We've got to mix in some football as well. I don't know how much NFL you watched. I didn't see any of the 1 o'clock games, to be honest with you, guy.
Did you go to the Pirate game?
I didn't go to the Pirate game. I was actually out of town, and I was driving back, and I was knocking around yesterday. So I didn't get to watch much of the 1 o'clock. I listened to some of the Pirate game, and then I watched the last 7 innings of it on television. My biggest takeaway from the entire NFL weekend, though, was from a 1 o'clock game that I didn't watch, and I'm kind of glad based on some of the things I saw from the box score. But how about Jacksonville kept 2 bad kickers, or had 2 bad kickers?
Well, they take Scobie back.
Exactly.
Would that be something?
Scobie gets cut by the Steelers. The guy who beat him out for his job that he had in Jacksonville misses 3 kicks yesterday. He missed a 53-yard buzzer beater. But there was a timeout a la the Iowa game for Pitt.
So he gets a second chance,
gets
but
a
he
second
misses
chance,
it anyway.
Misses that, and then misses one in overtime as well. Hey, can you believe what they were looking at in Jacksonville every day in practice with these 2 guys?
Well, and I think you can question. I wonder, and look, everybody wants a pound of flesh now. They're pissed about the Baltimore game. You know, they stuck with Sweetsham, and I know Sweetsham got off to a better start. His issues were more his first full year here. If he still is the best kicker available out there, do you stick with him a little bit longer, or do you have to cut him after causing a loss to your biggest rival? I have no confidence in this guy they're bringing in here. He's been in 2 camps, and he's been cut twice. He's never kicked in an NFL game. You think he's going to commit? Maybe he will. I mean, they've taken guys, you know, I remember they were lucky to get Norm Johnson back in the day, and they've come up with kickers from some unusual places, none crazier than Jeff Reed, who was working on a farm at the
time.
Well,
yeah, for all the people who are trying to get Jeff Reed back here, and by people I mean Jeff Reed himself, of course, this is sort of a Jeff Reed Hail Mary, is it not? Because they've gone the experienced kicker route here lately, trying to get guys here after Jeff Reed, because they went to Sean Sweezum, who was a journeyman, and people in D.C. and people in Dallas were laughing at Pittsburgh for signing him in the first place.
Yeah.
Then they went to Garrett Hartley, a guy who bounced around and was in Cleveland and New Orleans. And then they go to Scobie, who was a longtime guy in one place and then got beat out by the young kid, as we just chronicled. Now this is Jeff Reed rebooted. This is a guy who was kind of on the fringes and never kicked in a game, and let's see if we found him. So who knows what struck them about this guy in his tryout or what they have on film, but this is the route they're going in Boswell now.
Well, what I was thinking over the weekend when they cut Scobie and signed him, and I said this at the time, I think you were in the scrum when they were talking about kickers up at St. Vincent, and Tomlin said, I don't know, it's not my problem, I'm not the kicker. Remember when he said that?
And I
said at the time, would you say that about any other player on your team? It is your problem. You're the coach, and you lost one of the best kickers you had. Well, now they're on their 4th kicker of the year. I think it's his problem.
The other items from the weekend with the Steelers off, and boy, it's going to feel like a long time. It already has felt like a long time since that Baltimore game. Imagine what it's going to feel like by next Monday when they play again against San Diego. Watching San Diego and Cleveland, I did see a lot of that game, the 4 o'clock game, because I was in a sports bar, watch the Pirates and all the 4 o'clock games, which were all very interesting, a direct opposite of last week. Remember how awful the 4 o'clock games were last week? They all stunk. All of them came down to the conclusion, more or less, yesterday. And one of them was the Browns, who are in the Steelers division, and the Chargers, who the Steelers play next. So
About the only action I actually saw yesterday was the end of that game.
Was that the most Browns
Cleveland,
way?
Cleveland.
It was the most Browns way ever to lose a football game yesterday. That guy misses a field goal, another missed field goal, a buzzer beater. What was his name again? Lambeau, right? Wasn't it Lambeau,
yeah,
the name of the kicker from San Diego? Misses the
not
kick.
Not EAU, just like Andrew Lambeau.
Like Andrew Lambeau,
like,
right.
Yeah, Lambeau Field.
Tremont Williams jumps off sides on the buzzer-beating field goal, and they get a second chance. Unbelievable.
Well, they got hosed on the call originally, which was overturned because the catch to the 1-yard line had got them positioned for the tying touchdown. I thought, as that is unfolding, I'm thinking the Cleveland way to lose this now is they won't get the 2-point conversion and lose by 2, but they got it and still let San Diego work their way into field position. They almost scored too quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing how easy it is to move the ball in the NFL with under 2 minutes. When teams try so hard to not get beat deep, it is so easy to pick them apart underneath.
Yeah.
You saw that drive just mechanically move down the field. You saw the same thing in the Sunday night game before their kicker, New Orleans' kicker, missed a field goal last night, forcing overtime, and then Drew Brees hit an 80-yard pass to C.J. Spiller, which is an exciting way to end it. That's what the NFL wants to see all the time in overtime. But there are a couple of common themes this week throughout football, and it wasn't just the NFL, it was also college, because we've got to get to Pitt and the way they played on the road against Virginia Tech and the other two local teams too, as we recap Pick and Pork. But kicking and pass pressure all weekend in so many games across college and pro were the dominant storylines. Missed kicks and effective pass pressure. You watched all four of those games, and I watched all four on TV with the Pirates game on the fifth. Every time I looked up, there was a sack. There was pass pressure. And for more and more, we become a pass-oriented sport in the National Football League. The counter is get at the passer, get at the passer, get at the passer. And you're seeing that now with the Steelers, too, because they're getting after the passer with Tuitt and Hayward. And it's not about the outside linebackers anymore, but they're kind of getting back to what they were defensively, which is get at the passer. And you saw Kaepernick getting wrestled to the ground on back-to-back throws a few times for San Francisco. That was the Clay Matthews quote, "You ain't Russell Wilson, bro."
You ain't Russell Wilson, yeah, which to me is jag-off material in a way. But
Pitt was dominant at the line of scrimmage in the game against Virginia Tech. And I watched a lot of football, and I saw a lot of teams just ramping up the pressure and doing whatever they could to get in the quarterback's face.
Well, I think one thing, Tim, you know,
the Bengals had five sacks against the Chiefs. That's another one.
There's no blanket to just throw over everybody, but I think for a long time in football, every defense kind of set itself up to stop the run, and then you worried about the pass. If you can stop the run, make a team one-dimensional, you worry about defending the pass. You can't do that anymore. Teams give up on the run earlier. The run's just a part of their game. You know, they passed and set up the run, or the run is just a decoy to allow them to sneak things in the passing game they wouldn't get otherwise. So I think you have to set your defense up not to stop the run, but to pressure the passer. I think that's the key thing just in general in football across the board to winning today.
The Broncos did it to Bridgewater in crucial situations, but then it's funny because you get the ball or you give up the ball after you've scored a tying field goal or you kick off or whatever, and there's 45 seconds left. Team has a couple timeouts to work with. They march down the field easily. It doesn't matter what you've done in the previous 58 minutes, 59 and a half minutes in some cases. You turn the ball over to a talented quarterback, you lay back, and you try to cover, and you rush with four, and you're just trying to take away something deep. They'll find the spots. They'll find the soft spots in the zone. They'll find the creases, and they'll move the football. Two-minute offense is, it feels to me, the easiest thing in the world to do if the defense cooperates.
Well, fans have complained forever about prevent defenses. What it prevents is winning the game, but you understand what you know you're trying to do there. You'll give up that little bit of yardage, and people always wonder, well, if you can do that in the last 2 minutes and march down the field, why can't you do that another point of the game? Because the defenses aren't set up that way at another point of the game.
As far as the colleges go, and how'd you do in Pick and Pork? Get another good week,
3-1.
Yeah, I think I split. Two
only
and two.
Josh talking me out of taking Oklahoma. I'd have been 4-0 again.
Yeah, I had to go along with you guys on that one. I went with West Virginia, and there's another team, right? West Virginia gave up 7 sacks and committed 5 turnovers in that contest.
Well, that's not an easy place to go and play, but I think we're seeing what, you know, that they are the caliber of their competition the first month. Now they got 4 straight games, 3 more now against ranked teams this month, and that doesn't bode well for what we're going to see the rest of October.
44-24 the final score, but West Virginia had this as a field goal game on the last play of the third quarter. And then Oklahoma hit that bomb on the last play of the third quarter, and it was all Sooners from there. That one, just they lost what momentum they had. On the drop of a hat, it turned into a Sooners easy victory.
And you wonder if that game's in Morgantown, is that different? You know, is it easier to keep it together after that bomb if you're playing at home?
And Pitt against Va Tech, look, I gave Ken a world of crap last week about his 9-win prediction. I still don't think they get 9. I still think 9 is a dream. I still think they've got the typical 1 or 2 bad Pitt losses in them somewhere. But if you want to talk about defense and pass pressure, Pitt's defense got 7 sacks. They had 3 interceptions. Granted, yeah, That's not Virginia Tech's starting quarterback. Their starting quarterback was lost in the Ohio State game. But they made that Motley kid look awful during the course of the game. Their defense under Pat Narduzzi has become what he wanted it to be.
Yeah, and you figured it would. I mean, he's a great defense. And look at Michigan State, too. I mean, they're winning, but their defense doesn't look nearly as good as it did. I mean, you're seeing a double effect
Purdue
of Narduzzi. Yeah, Purdue. I mean, there were some pretty interesting Big Ten games. Indiana gave Ohio State a hell of a game. You knew that you just knew they were crunch when it had to, but they got up early and made it interesting. But I think you're seeing Narduzzi's loss affecting Michigan State and his gain affecting Pitt. They could get that offense going just a little bit. They could surprise a lot of people and be a lot better. But defensively, they're night and day different than what they were a year ago. I don't think teams know what the hell they're doing. I don't think they can figure them out. They're coming from everywhere.
Pitt's defense held Tech to 4 of 14 on third and fourth down. So much like the Steelers against the Ravens, and on a couple of occasions against the Rams too, if you can hold your own on third down as a defense, that's the key. And those two defenses, the two defenses in town, have been pretty good at that. 4 of 14 on third and fourth down for Pitt, I'll take that all the time. I mean, you can even sacrifice a few more and be in the game. But you get negative plays, you get the ball back, you're good on third and fourth down. That's the recipe right there, isn't it, to winning?
I think so. And they're through not the toughest part of their schedule, who they play, but, you know, they had all these road games at the beginning. Now they get to come back home a little bit. Now I think you got to be pretty encouraged if you're a Pitt fan at the moment.
Motley only threw for 91 yards. The defense was great against the run, too. It was only 9 yards rushing. 9 yards rushing from a Virginia Tech team. And on the other side of the ball, can they just go with – what's their thing about not going with Kadri Olesen? That's over now, right? Just go with him after this, right? 122 yards?
I would.
I don't even know what the mystery is at this point. I mean, he should be your guy. I don't know what it is about him that they feel like they don't want to trust. I don't know if he's had fumbling issues in camp or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not at practice every day. I mean, you know, a lot of times decisions are made on what people see at practice in all football, and we don't see that. I don't know if that's it or not.
And when it came to pick and pork, I think I guess it doesn't matter because we all would have made the same pick. I don't know if the picker would have, but all of us between you, me, Josh, and Ken, we would have gone with Army plus the points. And that one we would have breathed easy about. And obviously, yeah. Penn State was a touchdown in his first drive, right? Scored right away. It was
No, they ended up punting on their went three and out.
I
and
remember being
Army fumbled,
oh, that's
and then,
what it
then
was.
They took
okay.
it in. But I've been telling everybody since August. People think Penn State got all their scholarships. But they are so thin. Brandon Bell didn't start, their best tackler at linebacker. Marcus Allen, their starting free safety, didn't start. Their top two running backs didn't play. I mean, I said didn't start. They didn't play. So they're out there. They're without one of their best secondary players, without their leading tackler. They're without their top two running backs, and they got to play two freshman running backs. And it rained again. I'm hearing all these, you know, a lot of Penn State people. This is the first time since 1922 they had five straight home games. It has rained four of the five games. I mean, it rains for both teams. I'm just saying that doesn't help a struggling offense when they're playing in slop every single week. Hackenberg really doesn't have anybody to throw to. They were so conservative. I think, you know, they held Army's running game in check. Army didn't have a passing yard in the first half. And I think I think once they opened it up when they were in a little bit of trouble, they scored in two plays. They covered like 80 yards in two passes. Let the kid throw the ball a little bit.
Hackenberg was 10 of 19 for 156, and 82 came on one play. The touchdown play. So, you know, their defense did a nice job again holding Army down, but it's Army for crying out loud.
They don't have any backups, Tim. They are so thin, and they lost their center. Now, Andrew Nelson's been out since the first or second game, their best offensive lineman. They lost their center early in that game, Anthony Mangiero, or Angelo Mangiero. So he comes out, and the two Army touchdowns were both, they tried to rotate their second defensive line in. You can't play the starting guys all 60 minutes. Both times they put the second defense in, Army scored touchdowns. So they're just thin. They're starting 22, aren't bad when they're healthy. And by the way, you know, I wish Ken were on right now, and he keeps bringing up Temple. Temple is 4-0, and they've won three games on the road, and they were bowl eligible last year. He makes that sound like they lost to Appalachian State at the Big House or something that first game. So,
Penn State sent this tweet out. Since we were talking about Pitt's defense before, Penn State, according to what they tweeted, they are number one in fumble recoveries in FBS, third in sacks, and fourth tackles for losses. So,
well, if you want to complain that the rain has kept you from really getting your offense going, you can also
look at the other team's offense.
The other teams have been fumbling because it's been crap out there too. Army fumbled seven times in that game.
Anything related to the college teams you can bring up as well. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. Mondays on Trib Live Radio, brought to you by Relax the Back Solutions for Pain. Feel better, work better, live better. Online at RelaxTheBack.com. Now selling the mattress of the future, the most comfortable bed that you will ever sleep on. RelaxTheBack.com. Let's get to some emails here because a lot have come in. Got some about the Penguins, which we are going to get to in the second hour of the show after we talk to Rob Rossi, maybe a little bit with Rob as well. I'm going to kind of save the Penguin ones for next hour since there are a bunch and since there is a lot to get to. There's some meat on the bone there, but I want to get to that with Rob. We'll start things off with Jeff, who is emailing us from Illinois. Guys, after the Ravens debacle, I'm convinced that Tomlin and Colbert are a joke. I have zero confidence in their ability to make sound personnel decisions when it comes to critical members of this team, not to mention sound play calls when the games are on the line. Jeff from Illinois. And still hung up on that game, but I watched over the weekend, and it's pretty clear to me that Ken, more and more, I hate to admit this, but he's right about the Bengals distancing themselves from the division. They took care of business against the Chiefs. Like I talked about, the defense was good. Five sacks of Alex Smith. And you watch the Chiefs for 5 minutes, and you can see why that streak exists or existed. I don't know. They break the streak that somebody
catches. They did in the opener. The wide receiver.
Yeah, but for as long as it was, Alex Smith is petrified to go downfield. And especially against the Bengals, if you don't go down the field and try to stretch the field at all, you keep it packed in towards the line of scrimmage. That's where that defense thrives. That was the exact right team for the Bengals to play against this weekend, I thought.
Well, I mean, Dalton looks really comfortable. I mean, they're able to run the ball. They're able to throw the ball. Their front up front guys on defense are strong. They're fairly healthy right now. And that's what makes last week's loss. That game was there for the taking. You could still just be a game out of first, and Baltimore would be done. You would have eliminated half of the division by making Baltimore done, and Cleveland made themselves done. I mean, they're just out of it. Now you are closer to them in the bottom of the pack. And it's only early October, but I think at the moment, if you're realistic, you got to look around and start thinking, you know, I'm not looking at where they are in relationship with the Bengals. It's where they are with other teams that could be wild card competition.
Here's one from Billy. I'd have Chris Stewart catch. It's all about not letting up runs, and Cole pitches better when he has his personal catcher in there. Use Cervelli as a pinch hitter and replacement when Cole comes out of the game.
Well,
I thought we're beyond that. Aren't we kind of beyond the personal catcher?
Yeah, I would not, and I'll tell you why. I think the one difference, I love Chris Stewart. He's a great backup catcher. He's a good hitter. He's a clutch guy. He had that string going with hits and extra innings. The place where he's glaringly different than Cervelli, in my opinion, is when guys run. And it seems like he's thrown a ball into center field almost every Sunday afternoon that he started this year when a guy steals. In a game like this, they better pay attention to the runners when they do get on, and they can't let people – we talk about their own base running gaffes. They are too lackadaisical at letting other teams take liberties running the bases on them, and I think Cervelli's much better there. I think Cervelli's a better defensive catcher, and he's a better hitter for sure. So put those two together. Personal stuff aside, he's got to start.
Cervelli, though, did email one himself.
Oh, he has. Airmail, yeah, I don't think he's – I mean, he's not Russell Martin, but I think he's better than Stewart.
I should have said airmail. He did airmail one on Friday night, and that one
– that's the modern way, Tim. He emailed it.
If he emailed it, it would have gotten there directly and promptly. He airmailed it and almost threw it as far as Pedro hit it, like 470 feet. It was a really bad throw on Friday and contributed to some of the Reds' runs early on. I'll start preaching it now, and I'm going to do it for the next 3 days. If you have Harrison in the lineup, Marte, even though he's your cleanup hitter, he's a good bunter. He showed that. I think it was – where was the bunt? Was the bunt yesterday or was the bunt on Friday? He had a really good bunt that got him on base.
I didn't see Friday's game because I was at a high school game.
Make Arrieta field his position.
Hey,
try a couple.
Bunting is a great way. We saw Arrieta got in trouble the last time he pitched here. When he threw the ball over the first baseman's head, it essentially led to him getting taken out of the game.
And there was another miscommunication between him and Rizzo where nobody was charged with an error but trying to make the play at first base. There were two times in that game where there were issues at first because Arrieta had to go field the position. I say use it as a weapon. People should do it against John Lester every time he's out there. I think people should do it against a lot of the Pirate pitchers more often than they do. And we've talked ad nauseum, I know I have, about pitchers fielding their position and how bad they are at doing it these days. If especially it's close in the middle innings, I would do it. I'd even try maybe once or twice in the early innings to try to get Arrieta off his game and get a cheap run that way. And then you run. You do what other people are doing to your catchers, and you try to get them to throw the ball into center field.
Right. I'm not waiting around for a Pedro Alvarez home run to win this game. If you get McCutchen, I understand, especially he's had some leg issues this year. You got to get more out of him on the bases, I think. If he gets on, he needs to run. How many stolen bases did he have this year? I'm going to say 11. I'm going to say 8. And that's fine. Batting third in the lineup, you got a cleanup hitter up behind you. Maybe that's not a great running position. But I think you got to be the aggressor. You got to make this guy beat you, not sit back and think, well, maybe he'll tire it in the sixth inning, we'll score a couple of runs. Because the last 6 months has shown you that doesn't happen very often. Put some pressure on him.
In general, with Andrew McCutchen, you need more from him. Because aside from the 3-for-5 on Friday night, he went back to, I think, 0-for-4, 0-for-4, or 0-for-4, 1-for-4 these last two games. His batting average, that Jung Ho Gung, I gave it to you, was a 219 going into Friday night's game after the off day. It probably went up a little bit when he went 3-for-5, but it's got to be back down towards 210, 200, something like that since Jung Ho has been out of the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, obviously he's won an MVP without Jung Ho Gung even being in North America, but the point, I think the biggest thing, Tim, is I think he's walked 25 times since September 6th. The problem with that is, okay, he's getting on base there. They're not giving him you get out of your rhythm. I mean, if half of your at-bats over a month period of time, you don't get a pitch to hit and you walk, it's hard to say, stay on your game and stay crisp hitting. So I'd be very selective if I were him. If they're gonna go with the attitude, we're not going to let this guy beat us, all right, well then walk me and watch me steal second.
The other thing about the lineup that I wanted to get to, with Polanco, Harrison, McCutchen, Marte, Walker, Alvarez, Cervelli, Mercer, Cole, that's what I would do. That's how I would stack it. Anything about moving Alvarez up even more than have Walker behind him? Or do you have to put Alvarez? This goes back to the flip-flopping lefty-righty thing, because we talked about that with the overall game plan of coming up with your rotation for the NLDS should you win the game against the Cubs in the wild card. I know a lot of managers like to have righty-lefty opposite in their lineup, too. Should Hurdle think about that and have Alvarez down deeper in the lineup? In the 7-hole, so you have Cervelli 6th.
I would say it matters less in a game like this, Tim, for this reason. You may switch pitchers 4 straight batters in a wild card game anyway. They're going to have 3 days rest. Some of them are going to have 4 or 5 days rest. If you in a regular season, a guy's pitched 2 games before, you got a 4-game series coming up with a doubleheader on Sunday. This is a winner go home game. Whether you got righties and lefties, even if you have righties and lefties alternating and you get in trouble, I could see you changing pitchers to match up 4 straight batters. So I would put my lineup together the way I think it best suits me, not worried about what they're going to do pitching wise later in the game.
Here's an email, and this one is right up your alley, Guy. I have the feeling that the Big Ten schedule will not be kind to the Nittany Lions. James Franklin can recruit, but he sure can't coach offense. You brought up the whole Indiana thing. That's their first Big Ten opponent.
Yeah,
right?
And Indiana's playing really good ball. I think Indiana's going to beat them. Northwestern's going to beat them. Northwestern's really good this year. Michigan State will probably beat them. Ohio State will beat them. I mean, I think their winnable games are Illinois.
Hey, Iowa, speaking of Iowa, they beat Wisconsin. So, again, to lend credibility, and I wish Ken was here so I can give him a little pat on the back for his
pro-pit. Pitt's only lost to Iowa, right.
They go out and they beat Wisconsin. That's not a bad win. I'll give them some credit here.
But the one thing there, though, and I agree, Franklin has yet to prove that he can coach. He has proven that he can recruit. But, again, he is still suffering from the sanctions against the school. He has nobody on the two deep. If anybody gets hurt, there's nobody to back them up. They got punters that walk. They kick the punt sideways on Saturday. They don't have any special team scholarship players at this point in time. My man, the 250-pound 5-footer, he's doing a great job.
He's the best kicker in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Julius. But, before you kill him, he isn't worth. Christian Hackenberg's not throwing to Allen Robinson right now, who's now torturing NFL secondaries.
God, I want the Steelers to get him. I loved him coming out of college. I was a huge Allen Robinson fan.
Instead, they had Allen Robinson covering them instead of playing for them.
All right, here's one from Sean back to baseball.
How's he doing, I wonder? I haven't seen him in a while.
Allen?
Yeah, is he retired? Or
I haven't talked to Allen in a long time. I see him tweet from time to time, but that's it. I haven't seen him in person. Guy, to your point about Hap, He is 7-1 with us, a 1.37 ERA over his last 10 starts, which is the best in baseball over that span except for one pitcher, Arrieta, who was 9-0 with a 0.49 ERA. Also, did either of you think about the factor that Walker and Pedro were the two who drove in the runs for the first few innings, and that certainly could be a possibility when the last play ever is for were their last plays ever for the Pirates? In other words, send them off and have them be in the lineup for the last time? I mean, that might factor in a little bit with Walker. I don't think it is with Alvarez.
Yeah, and I'm not as convinced. I would be willing to bet for sure one of them is gone by the end of next year and probably both. But I'm not so sure both are gone at the beginning of next year. You know, you can get another 3-4 months out of them and trade them sometime in the middle of the season next year before the trade deadline, still get something for them. And especially with the injury to Gong, Walker becomes a bigger piece of the puzzle now. You don't have all the options in the infield you would have had before. So I'm not sitting there thinking that they have necessarily played their last games in a regular season at PNC Park.
Here's Clint Hurdle on J-Hap.
I think it was some early tweaks in his delivery. I think his own mindset helped, an opportunity to start fresh and new. It's not something he didn't have before, so he's able to reacquire it, reconnect the dots in the delivery, and just been pitching with so much conviction and focus and the execution today. He really had no breaking ball. And he went to the fastball, he went to the cutter, that stroke to the glove side play, the changeup play to keep him off the fastball. Very, very efficient outing again. You know, the 14-15 pitch at bat, Devoto. I mean, you get the last day of the season and you get that matchup and you get that kind of battle. And Jay didn't flinch. I actually thought he made a pretty good pitch for ball four. And then there wasn't a save in this game today, but it very well could have been the play Marte made in left field, throwing out Phillips, Walker diving and making the tag. Big play in the ballgame.
That might have been the save. I will say this, Melanson looked really good in relief yesterday.
Yeah.
He looked really crisp in closing out the game. That breaking ball of his, man, that one pitch he threw right on the knees, right on the kneecap of, was it Frazier who came up there in that situation? Whoever the right-handed hitter was, he didn't have a prayer. I think it was the second out. Second out of the inning, he didn't have a prayer at swinging at that pitch. What he said about the small tweak in the delivery and him pitching with conviction now, so forth and so on. It's funny how they handle that. Remember, Guy, because we talked about this. At first, when Ray Searidge first came on with us a couple starts into Hap's tenure here, we asked him, and he said, well, he made a small hitch, a little bit of a change to his delivery with his hips, how he was rotating. And it was kind of an offhanded, just quiet comment from Ray. But I remembered it. I stored it. And then for the next couple starts out there, the mantra was, we didn't do anything with him, he's just pitching better. Now it's come again full circle back to there was a little change in his rotation of his hips, and there was a little tweak in the delivery. I don't know why they got funny about that. Take credit for it. I mean, you found something, and you helped figure something out, and the guy's been fantastic ever since.
The one thing you got to consider, he's lost two games, and they both were to the Cubs, and both at PNC Park. His debut where he was pounded and lost 5-0. Everyone was like, great. You know, it was a week Neil Huntington was jag off of the week because he didn't pick anybody up. Burnett was hurt and it looked like they were falling apart. The other one was part of that day-night doubleheader. He pitched very well. They lost 2-1. But when you're taking all things into consideration, yeah, he's pitched great, but the two times he faced the Cubs, both at the venue where the wild card game is, he lost. So that in itself may be enough to, if you were tempted at all, to think about him, which, you know, it's not going to happen anyway. But and that's part of the thing, too. Maybe that has been discussed behind closed doors by the Pirates, but by not being able to nail down the home game to the last game of the season, you lost that option because he had to pitch yesterday. If you clinched that on Saturday, I wouldn't have pitched him yesterday. Jeff Locke or Charlie Morton or Vance Worley would have started yesterday had
already
clinched. You know,
well, whether you're going to use
so it's kind of a moot point to discuss it. He's not going to be available.
I hear you. Whether it was for the wild card or just to give him an extra day of rest to have him ready to go in the NLDS whenever it comes around. Not like he would have needed it, as we pointed out before, but why even bother risking it?
Or, Tim, just to have him be the guy you go to if Cole goes out there and just doesn't have it.
Right,
if you get in the second inning, he's having third inning, and you're going to go to someone else immediately, have him right. That he would be the guy.
sportstalk@tribweb.com. Get your emails in. I see a bunch that we haven't gotten to yet. There are some from over the weekend that came in. We weren't even on the air that I will get to as well. Plenty more to come on the Penguins, as we point out. If you want to get some Penguin emails in, now is the time to do so, or tweets at Ben's Trib Live 970, at Guy Junker, WTAE. We're going to talk to Rob Rossi next about all things Pittsburgh sports. You will hear from Jay Happ in the second hour of the program. Probably Daniel Sprong, too, at some point. I know we're going to get to that audio. He made the team. Kind of interesting. I like the fact that they did this. We'll see how sincere they are about it based on how he plays over the
first 9 games.
Between
keeping him and getting rid of Gonchar, it was a great weekend,
yes,
I think.
One Laird plan is in the books as a total failure, and that was the Gonchar one. And another reason why I'm mad that Ken isn't here, because I wanted to hold that over his head while I was giving him credit
all
for
of these
stuff.
May be the reasons he's not here. He won't face the music today.